timing. She quickly concealed the safe and retreated behind one of the thick curtains. She needn't fear discovery within its thick folds, merely suffocation. The door swung open with a heavy creak. Clearly the intruder wasn't bothering with caution. She waited until she heard the sound of the painting swinging back before she carefully peered round the edge of the curtain. The man had his back to her. He was of above average height, with well-squared shoulders and a slender waist. His pale hair, a shade somewhere between silver and lavender, was gathered back in a short tail that fell neatly against his perfectly fitted jacket. His trousers were just as well cut, molded elegantly to his body. It was perfect formal visiting gear, if your host hadn't been murdered. His top hat was tilted insouciantly to one side, and he was wearing pale grey kid gloves. He reached out a hand to delicately brush the wheel handle of the safe, then snatched his fingers back with an angry hiss. A thin scent of burning flesh hung in the air, even through his gloves. Irene let the curtain fall back into place and considered. Clearly, there was more to Lord Wyndham's alliance with the fair folk than met the eye. If he'd made sure that his safe was made of cold iron, so proof against Fay. This supported the newspaper's whole diabolical intrigue theory, and it rather fitted what she knew about the Fay. They liked complicated relationships. It didn't matter if they were loved or hated, as long as the other person had strong feelings toward them. Strong enough, for instance, to install a completely Fay-proof safe. And if she'd been able to choose her options a few hours ago, being trapped in a dead vampire's private study with an angry Fay would not have been one of them. Then, more alarmingly, she heard him sniff. It wasn't the phlegmatic nose clearing of a cold. It was a hungry sniff, a tasting of the air.
Oh.
His voice hung on the air like incense.
Come out, come out, little mouse, or shall I come looking for you?
Irene took a deep breath, set her face to an expression of polite unconcern, and moved the curtain back. The Liechtenstein ambassador, I presume, she guessed. His face was as pretty as his body had suggested, but his eyes were slitted like a cat's, and pure gold.
Why?
He said, tone smooth as honey.
You are quite correct. But what sort of little mouse hides behind the curtains? Are you a blackmailer, little mouse? A spy? A detective? A little rat in the arras, just waiting to be stabbed?
She seized the opportunity to present her cover story. I'm a journalist, here to investigate Lord Wyndham's murder, sir. I was hoping to interview you. I hadn't dared hope to catch up with you so soon. If I could ask you for your views on the situation. He glided a step toward her.
What paper do you represent?
The Times, she said. There was a Times in practically every single alternate she'd ever visited.
And how did you know that I'd come here? Pretty little mouse.
There was something very predatory about his face now. Well, of course, I had no idea, she rattled off hastily, reaching into her reticule. It was a total surprise to meet you here, sir. But I suppose it's not surprising that on hearing of his death, you naturally hurried to his domicile with the intention of expressing your condolences to his...
His hand caught her wrist. No guns, little mouse. I don't think we want the police coming. No. This is all going to be very nice and quiet, and you're going to tell me exactly what's going on.
She could lie to him, she could try to resist him, or she could simply get that cool, elegant, well-gloved, slender hand off her wrist. Take your hands off me, sir, she said, anger sliding into her voice, or you will regret it. He paused.
You're very self-assured, he said.
And for the first time, there was a fraction of something other than malice, or purring self-satisfaction in his voice. Perhaps an edge of uncertainty.
I wonder. Are you perhaps a little more than you look?
Aren't we all? Irene answered.
And is there someone backing you?
Someone you don't want to antagonize, she said. She'd got the measure of his suspicion now. She'd only met lesser fair folk before, but they practically defined so devious that they'd fall over if they tried to walk in a straight line. This one was thinking in terms of conspiracies and agents. She could play that game just as well as anyone else. But I can't give names, not even to an ambassador. But what I can perhaps give is a degree of cooperation. He released her wrist and raised a delicate eyebrow.
You intrigue me.
She understood that sort of language. She was getting the message that he might find her useful, loud and clear. And intrigue had nothing to do with it. Instead, she nodded towards the safe. Perhaps we are both looking for the same thing, sir. He nodded once, sharply.
Perhaps we are. Well, open it.
Do you have the combination, sir? He rattled off a list of numbers as she worked at the safe's combination mechanism. So it was just the iron that had kept him out. She wondered what he'd have done if she hadn't been here. Perhaps enchanted or coerced some passerby off the street, or brought a human agent here later. His gloved fingers brushed the back of her neck, and she shivered. He needs you for the moment. He won't try anything until he's got what he's looking for. The best way to deal with him is to give him something more interesting to pounce on.
Open it,
he purred from far too close behind her. Irene swung the safe door open and put some distance between herself and the Fae, physically feeling his focus shift from her to the safe's contents. Several stacks of papers lay tidily in the large iron cavity. On top of them was a small piece of card embossed with a golden mask, signed with the name Belphegor. The Fae hissed, his hands clenched, and Irene heard his kid gloves rip. He turned towards her, his face furious. Saying, don't blame me, or it wasn't my fault, would just have been signalling that she was a victim. As calmly as she could manage, and wishing for a few more feet of distance between them. Actually, make that a few yards, or even a few miles, she said. This makes no sense. If Belphegor stole the book and wanted to advertise the fact, why leave her card here, inside the safe, and not out on the desk? He blinked once, and seemed to take a step back mentally.
Indeed, he said, pacing the room. It's the book that's important here. Keep talking, little mouse. Tell me what you know, what you see here. Tell me what you know about the book. Explain it to me. Make yourself worthwhile to me.
There were two factions, Irene guessed. It was as good a theory as any. It might even be true. She needed more data. The ambassador seemed to be looking for the book as well, so why not others? Perhaps she could use that. And Belphegor wasn't necessarily after the book. She could have been after something Lord Wyndham kept in his safe. So what if the person or people who stole the book and who killed Lord Wyndham were entirely different? If they were waiting here in the study while he was hosting the party downstairs? She walked over to look at the glass display case where the book had been. I can't tell whether they would have taken the book first and then killed him, or vice versa. Well, of course she couldn't tell. She was deducing all this on the spot. Or, to be more accurate, guessing wildly. But we know they beheaded him on the desk. Then they went out through the house and let his head on the railings outside the front door.
Why not out through the window? He interrupted.
It wouldn't open. She'd glanced down at the catch while hiding in the window embrasure. It had been soldered closed. It must have been one of Lord Wyndham's precautions. Besides, there was a party going on. It would have been simple enough to walk through the house and out through the front door if they'd concealed the head, and if they looked enough like guests or servants. He turned and pointed a finger at her.
And Belphegor?
If she escaped by catching a rope from a passing zeppelin, then she must have gone up by the roof. He nodded.
And now a crucial point, little mouse. I'm not asking for the names of any people, but if you don't tell me what group you are working for, I shall be reluctantly forced to... Oh, really, why soften things? I won't be reluctant about it at all.
His smile cut like a knife. Irene was fairly sure that she could invoke the language against him before he reached her, or simply slam the safe door into him. But fairly sure wasn't enough. She tried to recall Dominic's dossier as he provided a list of the better-known secret societies.
The Cathedral of Reason, sir, she said reluctantly, letting it be drawn out of her.
That had been one of the more neutral groups, more concerned with general scientific progress than slaughtering horrific fiends and dangers to humanity, or being dangers to humanity. He nodded as if she had confirmed a hypothesis.
Very good. Now, little mouse, I have a bargain for you, or rather, for your masters. We both want the manuscript, but we'll get it faster by working together. A copy could be arranged, a deal can be made. Do you agree?
What Irene truly wanted to say was that she didn't like being called Little Mouse. It wasn't even as if she was that small. She was 5'9", which was a perfectly good height for a woman in most worlds. Fair folk or not, this man was an arrogant, insulting, offensive bore, and if she could, she would personally make him run a marathon ahead of an oncoming locomotive. What she said was,
"Yes, sir."
She dropped her eyes submissively. Fair folk were so accustomed to falling into attitudes and high drama themselves that they half expected it from humans and were always gratified to find their expectations borne out. They thought of everything in terms of stories, with themselves as the main character. They played roles. No, they lived roles, and they saw the world around them in terms of the mental movie in which they were starring. He wanted her to be a meek little agent. Very well, she'd play the part for him, and use it to get the job done, and try to ignore the burning throb of anger and incipient ulcers. He smiled at her. This time, it was more of a seductive smile than an angry, thin-lipped snarl. It was warm enough that she could nearly have smiled back, if she hadn't known how much of a mask it was. It was inviting, somehow suggesting darkness and candlelight and closeness. A catch in the breath, a warm hand in hers, a pressure against her body.
Good girl. Wait a moment.
He walked across to the desk and began throwing drawers open, rifling through them to find paper, pen and ink.
Where did he keep it? Ah, yes.
He dropped a sheet of paper on the dried blood, opened a bottle of purple ink, dipped a quill in it, and scrawled a quick note.
There. We're having a ball at the embassy tomorrow. Here's a private invitation for you. Bring a friend. Bring a lover, even. Find me there, and tell me what your masters say to my little proposition. And remember...
He let the sentence hang in the air. Obligingly, Irene said,
Yes, sir?
Remember that I would make a much better master for you than the Cathedral of Reason.
There was a glow about him, an aura of presence, as if the light that fell on him came from somewhere else. Somewhere more beautiful, more special. His eyes were pure gold, reassuring, enchanting, all-encompassing. Even the slit cat pupils now seemed more natural than human eyes ever could. He stepped forward to lay his hands on her shoulders, drawing her close against him.
I will be everything to you, little one. I will protect and shield you. You will be my adored one, my only special love, my sweet, my pet, my beauty, my heart's delight.
He smelled of spice and honey. She could feel the coldness of his hands through his torn gloves and the fabric of her clothing.
Say that you'll be mine,
he murmured, his lips close to hers. The markings across Irene's back burst into sudden agony, and she pulled away harshly, gasping for breath. He took a step towards her, but she raised her hand, and he paused.
"I belong to the library, to the Cathedral of Reason," she spat. "Seducing me so I'll betray my masters will not convince them to form an alliance."
"Oh, well." He raised his fingers to his lips and blew her a kiss. "I felt like trying. I'll see you tomorrow, little mouse. Don't forget, or I'll come and find you."
He turned on his heel and strode across to the safe, scooping up the papers and visiting card. She could see the care that he took not to touch the cold metal.
"Merely our private correspondence, my dear," he tossed over his shoulder. "About library books. Nothing to concern you."
Irene bit her tongue hard enough to hurt, trying to keep her face inquisitively bland. He could have used the word library just in passing. He didn't necessarily suspect her. Or he might have been talking in order to keep her attention on him, rather than on anything else. Paranoia gibbered at the back of her mind. Some fae did know about the library, the powerful ones. Was this particular fae that powerful? The door slammed behind him. She had nearly given way. He'd been more than she expected, in every sense. If it hadn't been for her bindings to the library, she might not have been able to resist in time. And what then? The thought literally made her shiver. There had been other cases of librarians who'd been lost to chaos. The stories weren't reassuring. The undocumented cases, even more so. And there was the one horror story that every librarian knew, about the man who'd turned traitor to the library and sold it out. He had never been caught and was still out there. Her nails dug into her palms as she forced herself into proper posture and composure. She walked across to look at the document on the desk. It was a basic note of admission to the Liechtenstein Embassy for tomorrow night, for a grand ball. It was signed, Silver. Chapter 5.
"I found out all about it," Kai said as he sliced a bread roll into halves.
"Hey, this is real butter. Cool."
"We're lucky that it isn't flash frozen with chemical additional supplements," Irene said. "They'd had trouble finding a restaurant that wasn't billing itself as all new and all special, equipped with the latest scientific devices to preserve, enhance, and cook the food that was served inside. Post-meal condition of the diners was not mentioned."
"It makes a nice change," Kai said. He laid the knife down between the two pieces of buttered roll. "So, do you want to go first, or me?"
Kai was clearly bubbling with enthusiasm to tell her all about his investigation. Irene couldn't help but wonder just how discreet a criminal he'd been in his own alternate before joining the library. She made him keep quiet until the waiter had brought their wine and retreated into the curtained shadows of the restaurant, and tried not to be too amused by it all. 5 years of enforced study had clearly left him with enough spare energy to run the lights for most of London.
"You first," Irene said. "Give me a full breakdown."
"All right. Now, first of all, Liechtenstein is a major power in this world. They do the best Zeppelins, and everyone knows it. That newspaper seller was right. And they do sell information, but not their big secrets."
"No industrial espionage?" Irene asked. "No reverse engineering of technology, or attempts to invade other countries?"
"Ah, there's a reason for that." Kai took a sip of his wine. "Hey, this isn't bad, for a cheap little hole-in-the-wall place like this."
Irene nodded.
"So, what's the reason?"
"The Fae keep them out. They keep the entire country well protected to shield their own goings-on. And it keeps out the industrial and national spies as well. Remember the bit about the ambassador being one of the fair folk?"
Kai pressed his lips together for a moment in a gesture of pure disgust.
"It's not just him. There's a lot of them in Liechtenstein. They spawn there, or breed or something. It's a nexus for their filth." The local populace tolerates them. They've been bought off with trinkets and flashy glamour.
Irene frowned. It didn't sound as if Kai was going to be thrilled that they were going to the embassy ball tomorrow night.
Ah, she said neutrally, and sipped her wine. So it's quite normal for fair folk to be amongst the Liechtenstein embassy staff.
Kai nodded.
They're known for it, even. Newspaper reporters were trying to get interviews at the embassy gates. One said that other nations dealing with the country carried cold iron talismans now. It was that bad.
Good to know that works, Irene said. Assuming it does?
Well, they wouldn't carry them unless it did, Kai said. Unless...
He paused.
Unless the fair folk are just faking the whole thing in order to lure their victims into a false sense of security.
Well, that's possible too, Irene agreed regretfully. She held up her hand to pause him as the waiter arrived with their soup, and they were quiet until the man had left. All right, she said, picking up her spoon. Go on.
The current ambassador has held the post for the last 80 years, Kai said, picking up his own spoon. His name is Silver, or rather, people call him Silver. It seems nobody knows his real name outside Liechtenstein, if anyone does. Though the fact that it's apparently a reportable fact about him that nobody knows his real name.
He sighed.
Fay. The reporter that I was talking to said that he hadn't changed at all in the last 80 years, except to update his wardrobe. He's got a fairly typical reputation for a fair folk. Seductive, arrogant, party-going, patronizes artists.
Irene thought about that. Does he patronize engineers? She asked.
The reporter didn't mention that. Kai said. Why?
Irene shrugged. It just seemed relevant, given we're told this alternate favors technology, and if Liechtenstein's economy is based on airships. By the way, you know a lot about the fair folk.
Kai looked as though he was considering spitting on the ground. Those creatures. We had something like them in the alternate that I came from. Pervasive thieves, wasters, destroyers. They make their way into society and tear it apart. They destabilize reality. They're tools of chaos. They are chaos. You can't expect me to approve of things like that.
Look, calm down, Irene said. Have some soup. I agree that they're malign, but we're not here on some sort of campaign to root them out. Remember the mission. She was surprised by his vehemence. It was more than she'd expect from a trainee. But personal experience was probably behind it. She wondered how personal the experience might be. An involvement with one of them? The loss of a friend or lover? Our job is to get the text, and then we can get the hell out of here. Kai stared at her for a moment, then lowered his eyes.
I apologize for my improper behavior, he said, suddenly formal. You are the head of this mission, of course. I just wish to convey my feelings on the subject. My extremely strong feelings on the subject.
Irene tried to think of a way to respond which wouldn't seem dismissive. And he was shifting speech patterns again, from slang to formal, and back again. She wondered if he'd noticed it himself. Possibly the influence of the library, compared to his previous edgy lifestyle? She set those thoughts aside for later consideration, and did her best to smile. It's all right, really. You aren't the only one who's had problems with chaos, but we can't assess how to handle this situation until we have a full picture of it. Please tell me more about Liechtenstein and the embassy. Kai returned a thin smile, but it was clearly a duty rather than a pleasure.
Well, as I was going to say, the Fey infestation in Liechtenstein seems to help keep out neighboring countries. Maybe because they're not sure what the Fey could do. Or maybe they're worried about the Fey expanding into their countries. And Liechtenstein's a peach that a lot of people would otherwise want to pluck from the branch and sink their teeth into.
Irene raised her eyebrows.
Okay, Kai said, waving his spoon. A dramatic simile. But have you noticed how very balanced and counterbalanced this whole world is? If you take Liechtenstein, there are mad scientists everywhere. The people I questioned implied some kind of mad scientist race. I know I'm just a trainee,
But surely the influence of science there could only be to balance the amount of chaos the Fae bring to the table, especially in Liechtenstein itself. Or maybe the Fae are telling stories about science, Irene hypothesized. Or being involved in stories about science. Or maybe Liechtenstein is taking on the role of Belgium in this alternate. My father once did a check on it in as many alternates as he could find. Belgium always seems to get invaded, fall prey to meteorites, or get infested by alien fungus or something. And don't look now, but someone's just come in and is staring at us.
It must be you he's looking at, Kai said hopefully, tilting his spoon in a vain attempt to catch a reflection of the room behind him. Do something odd and see if he reacts.
He's coming this way, Irene said briefly. He appeared every inch the wealthy aristocrat, from the top hat to the silk-lined cape to the silver-headed cane. A sword cane, she suspected. His eyes were fixed on Kai. Quickly, she murmured. Did you do anything that you should have told me about?
Definitely not.
Kai turned to follow Irene's gaze.
Wait. I saw him at the embassy.
As I saw you, sir, the man said, doffing his top hat in a small bow to Kai, then a subsidiary one to Irene. May I join you at this table?
Kai flicked a glance to Irene. She nodded slightly. He turned back to the man.
Of course, he said, though I don't think we've been introduced.
A waiter had come dashing up with an extra chair and withdrew the man's hat and cloak. The man seated himself and leaned forward, steepling his fingers.
I trust I may speak freely before your associate.
He nodded towards Irene.
Some of what I have to say may not be fit for the ears of one of the gentler sex.
Kai looked at Irene for a moment. Irene hesitated, then looked down at her plate in a docile manner. She'd had to play this sort of role before, though admittedly not when coaching a junior at the same time.
Please let me stay, sir, she said to Kai. I will simply take notes as normal.
Kai nodded to her in a lordly manner, then turned back to their guest.
I assure you that Miss, he barely faltered, Winters here, is entirely trustworthy, and is a valued associate of mine. You may speak freely in front of her, though I would be interested to know what you propose to discuss.
Part of Irene's mind was surprised at Kai's sudden elegance of speech. He'd shifted again into that extreme formality which she'd noted earlier. And while she could manage such linguistic shifts easily enough from experience in various alternates, she hadn't thought that he'd be so capable. Stranger and stranger from a boy who claimed to be from a cybered-up alternate where he was a petty criminal. She very much wanted to talk to Coppelia about this. The other part of her mind wondered why he had dubbed her Winters and what the cultural reference might be. She watched their guest from under her eyelashes. He had relaxed a little now and was leaning back in his chair. He was a very aquiline physical type, with a well-defined nose, deep-set shadowy eyes, high cheekbones, and long, delicate fingers. The perfect example of a lead protagonist in certain types of detective fiction. In fact, she wondered if...
Very well, the stranger said. Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Peregrine Vale, 15th Earl of Leeds.
Kai gave a little nod.
Kay Strongrock at your service. Might I ask the nature of your business?
The waiter cleared away the soup course and brought the main meal for Irene and Kai. He also brought a spare glass for the visitor, filling it unbidden, before retreating again. The intrusion allowed Irene to bite her lip and refrain from kicking Kai under the table, as she'd just managed to work out where he was getting his pseudonyms from. Strongrock, Rochefort, Winters, De Winter. She would have to explain to him why it was a bad idea to pull pseudonyms from literary sources. If the other person had read the book, it gave them far too much information. They'd start looking around for three possible musketeers or mysterious Richelieu-like manipulators behind the scenes. Even though she had to admit that being compared to Milady de Winter had its flattering side.
I observed you this afternoon, Mr. Strongrock, the Earl of Leeds stated. You were outside the Liechtenstein embassy. You arrived while they were unloading their zeppelins. You watched the newspaper reporters and then questioned them afterwards.
Your lordship seems to have paid a great deal of attention to my movements, Kai said. There was an undertone of threat to his voice.
The Earl of Leeds tilted his hand.
Call me Vale, please. After all, this is a purely private meeting, in a very unofficial capacity.
Kai raised an eyebrow and sliced into his steak.
Oh. Indeed, Vale said.
He smiled a little. And it was at that moment that Irene remembered where she'd seen his face before. She'd picked up some newspapers earlier to get a quick impression of the current political and temporal dynamics. Vale had been on the third page of one, shot half in profile, with him half turned away, clearly unwilling to have the photograph taken. The caption had been, "Noted detective consults with British Museum." Irene continued to eat, thinking furiously. If their companion was indeed a noted detective, investigating the Liechtenstein embassy and working with the British Museum, they were either unexpectedly lucky or in very serious trouble.
So, Kai said, leaving aside that I saw no sign of your following me.
That, Vale said smoothly, is what you may expect to see when I am following you. Kai choked slightly on his wine.
Pardon me. But then, sir, why were you following me? What was so interesting about my activities?
Vale's smile narrowed even further.
Why, Mr. Strongrock, the fact that they mirrored my own. I suspect that we are investigating the same matter. To be frank, sir, if we are both chasing the same hare, I would rather that you did not start it and cause us both to lose it.
Kai darted Irene a glance. Clear as daylight, she read a desperate plea for help in his eyes. He said meditatively. Irene gasped. It was probably a little theatrical, but she hoped not too much so.
Mr. Strongrock, our investigation is strictly private. Even if his lord, that is, even if Mr. Vale is a famous private detective, we could be looking into entirely different matters.
She hoped that conveyed the message of, we need more information, thoroughly enough. Kai patted her on the hand soothingly.
My associate has a point, Mr. Vale, he said. We are operating under conditions of strict confidentiality.
As am I, sir, Vale said with equanimity, not seeming at all put off. Whatever minor assumptions I might make about you are simply the result of anything you may have revealed to me yourselves, rather than from any investigations on my part.
Kai raised his eyebrows.
But we have revealed nothing to you, he said, a moment before Irene could kick his ankle. Forgive me when I say that it is obvious that you are strangers to London, Vale said.
He turned his glass in his hand, regarding it with a dry smugness.
I am not speaking merely of Mr. Strongrock's need to check the street signs when leaving the Liechtenstein embassy. Neither of you have the accent of native Londoners, and, to be truthful, I cannot place either of you within the British Isles.
He frowned a little.
Which is unusual. Miss Winters might perhaps have a trace of Germanic brutality to her verbs, possibly the result of a governess or boarding school at an impressionable age. Mr. Strongrock, on the other hand, has the accent and the bearing characteristic of certain noble families of Shanghai. While neither of these in themselves is that unusual in London, both of you are dressed in a manner that suggests a hasty choice of clothing from a second-rate supplier. Miss Winters's gloves, for instance.
Irene glanced down at her gloves, which lay next to her table setting, unable to resist the impulse. She knew that they clashed with her dress, but there hadn't been much of a choice in the shop.
Precisely, Vale said. A woman as carefully turned out as Miss Winters would not commit such an elementary error in dress. Similarly, Mr. Strongrock's shoes.
Kai shuffled his feet further under his chair. were clearly worn before him by a man with a habit of kicking the right side of his forefoot against his chair, but Mr. Strongrock himself does not do so. And if the two of you had been in London for a while now, and making inquiries about Lord Wyndham and the Liechtenstein Embassy, then I assure you that I would have known about it.
Kai opened his mouth, and Irene realized that he was about to say something like, "How did you know I asked about Lord Wyndham?" Apparently, he had never been taught the first defense in the science of provocative questioning. "Keep your mouth shut." This time, she did manage to kick him under the table. He shut his mouth again.
Vale said, apparently satisfied. "A sharing of information could be quite useful. But on the other hand, as Miss Winters has said, we could be looking into entirely different matters. I believe we have come to the point where we decide whether or not to trust one another." "So it seems," Kai said, making a recovery. "Some more wine?" "Thank you," Vale said, extending his glass to be filled.
There was silence for a few minutes. Irene turned over various strategies in her mind. Unfortunately, most of them involved Vale briefly leaving the table so that she could talk urgently with Kai, and this seemed unlikely to happen. She was simultaneously impressed by the man's skills of observation and significantly worried by them. This sort of intellect was splendid in fictional characters, but in practice it risked making their task a great deal more awkward. Fortunately, the situation was interrupted by screams and loud grinding noises from the street. Diners dropped their knives and forks to turn towards the doorway. A couple of men leaped to their feet, wine glasses still in their hands. Kai managed an infinitesimal blink at Irene, then turned to Vale.
"Do you think we should investigate, sir?"
"Of course,"
Vale exclaimed, rising. He picked up his sword stick, balancing it casually in his left hand.
"Madam, kindly stay here. Mr. Strongrock, if you would accompany me."
He strode towards the door.
"What do I do?"
Kai hissed at Irene.
"Stay with him," Irene whispered. "I'll hold back. Find out what's going on. Be careful, he's a detective."
"I'd worked that bit out,"
Kai muttered, but he displayed a wild enthusiasm as he raced after Vale, an eagerness for action. Irene glanced around as the two men raced off. Nobody creeping out of the shadows to try to abduct her while their attention was elsewhere. Good. She picked up her bag and walked after them. The restaurant's reception area had large glass windows which provided a convenient view of the street outside. The place was in total chaos. A giant mechanical centipede. Well, some sort of segmented insect with multiple legs. Irene was hardly going to stand there and count them all, was wreaking havoc in the narrow alleyway outside. She spotted a badly damaged cart and several broken windows. There was barely room for it to navigate, let alone turn around, and it was dancing a few steps forward and then a few steps back as its front feelers seemed to quest for something or someone. Oil oozed from its crevices, while steam puffed from its head segment and mingled with the ambient fog. She noticed that a couple of people had already been hurt, and bystanders were screaming and running in all directions, then of course pausing at a theoretically safe distance to watch what it did next. Kai and Vale were standing in the doorway, assessing it. At least, Vale looked as if he was assessing it. Kai just looked stunned.
"How the hell did that thing get through the streets?" Kai asked.
Vale sniffed.
"It probably came up from the sewers. The recent renovation program has been a godsend to criminals across London."
"Vale!"
The creature's echoing voice boomed down the street.
"Prepare to face your doom."
"Ah," Vale said cheerfully. "It's for me."
Kai looked hurt.
"It might have got us confused," he said. "Perhaps it's for me."
"No, no, I assure you it's for me," Vale said. "But would you mind watching the rear end while I distract the front? Sometimes they have high-emission scintillotherms located there."
"Of course," Kai said. "Not a problem."
Irene leaned against the wall and tried not to sigh.
Perhaps Vale was an ethical person, if his enemy was happy to risk innocent lives to hunt him down. Assuming that he hadn't staged the entire thing, of course. But it was also just one more distraction. How on earth was she supposed to manage an investigation with these constant interruptions? The two men ran out into the street, Vale to the right towards the creature's head, and Kai to the left towards its rear. Irene debated which one to follow. Kai was under her protection, but following Vale could be far more informative. The question was settled for her as the centipede threw itself into rapid reverse, metal claws scraping on the pavement as it danced backwards. Its head came into view, a monstrous steel model of mandibles and huge faceted glass eyes, large enough for a man to sit in, with steam jetting out in thick squealing bursts on either side. Vale stood before it, his sword unsheathed from its cane and blazing with electricity. Each time that the centipede lowered its head to try to bite at him, he parried, and sparks flew to sizzle against pavement and walls. With a dazzling burst of speed, he darted forward between the gnashing mandibles and leapt up onto the main part of the centipede's head, balancing there for a moment. He raised his blade and brought it down into one of the creature's eyes. Electricity blazed up in a great sparking column. The centipede gave a hissing scream and thrashed all along its length, one segment jolting into the next, with steam gushing out from all the apertures. A hatch dropped open beneath the creature, and a man in a greasy black boiler suit came rolling out of it, coughing and spitting. Vale leapt down from the head, landing in a billow of coattails. He pointed his sword at the man.
"Talk, sir, or..."
At that point, Irene's attention was distracted by someone attempting to tug her bag out from under her arm. She turned to see one of the waiters. No, it wasn't one of the waiters. It was a man in evening dress, with a napkin hastily thrown over one arm, posing as a waiter. His watch was far too expensive to be a waiter's, his grey moustache too well-groomed, and his right hand, she noted in the clarity of the moment, had thin electrical burn lines running from knuckles to wrist. He tugged again. Irene released the bag, keeping hold of the strap, letting him tug at it. She dropped into a semi-squat, balancing on her left heel, then brought her right leg out into a straight wide pivot. It caught him off balance, and he fell to the ground with a curse. She straightened again smoothly, pulling her bag back against her body, and picked up one of the flimsy restaurant chairs. It was of dubious quality, and as her antagonist tried to get up, it broke very thoroughly when it slammed into his body. He staggered back. She picked up another chair. Outside, there were more explosions. Inside, people were gasping and pointing at her and the pseudo-waiter. Irene tried to decide whether it was more important to maintain her cover as a helplessly feminine secretary, or to beat the bag snatcher over the head with the chair and take him prisoner. After all, he wasn't definitely involved with any larger conspiracies, and might simply be a petty thief. The hell with it. She brought the chair down on his head, and he went backwards like a sack of potatoes. She dropped the remnants of the chair and put her free hand to her chest, hyperventilating.
She gasped. "I come here on holiday, and this man, this thief, tries to snatch my bag, and nobody tries to help me. Not even a single person comes to a helpless woman's defense."
"My dear Miss Winters, I am so sorry."
Vale had stepped back into the restaurant, sheathing his sword.
"I do regret that you should have suffered assault at the hands of some hooligan."
He looked at the face of the prostrate man and blinked.
"Do I understand that this man assaulted you?"
"He attempted to snatch my bag," Irene said, sniffling a little. I simply reacted on instinct."
"You?" Vale snapped his fingers, and two of the waiters responded. "Have this man taken to the nearest prison at once."
"It's good to be an owl and a noted detective," Irene reminded herself, a little wistfully.
Kai walked into the restaurant, brushing ashes and powder off his jacket.
"Well, that seems to be... Irene, that is, Miss Winters, what happened?"
He glanced warily from Irene to Vale and back to Irene again. clearly wondering if the whole thing had been some sort of diversion. Irene pointed a finger at the man being dragged off by the waiters.
That person attempted to grab my bag. I resisted.
I suggest we return to our table at once, Vale said, lowering his voice. This merely confirms my suspicions.
5 minutes later, they were round the table again. The steak had gone cold, but the wine was still drinkable. The general buzz of conversation had resumed its former level. Irene was surprised at how quickly people seemed to have forgotten the centipede attack. It implied that such things were common, which wasn't a comforting thought.
"Forgive me my earlier discretion," Vale said. "And thank you for your assistance, Mr. Strongrock. But this attack on Miss Winters only proves what I suspected." "And what is that?"
Kai demanded, turning towards Vale. Irene had the impression that he was slightly miffed that she hadn't asked about his valiant conduct vis-à-vis the centipede's tail. She made a note to get the full details at some point, when a valuable contact wasn't engaged in sharing useful information.
"But your investigations into the fair folk have been noted."
Vale leaned forward.
"I observed your questions at the embassy, Mr. Strongrock. And now, a man whom I know to be a Fae agent tries to steal Miss Winters's handbag. Am I wrong to suspect a link?"
Kai threw Irene a frantic glance. She gave him a slight nod.
"You are not wrong, sir," Kai said firmly. "There is a link." "I thought as much."
Vale glanced between them.
"In that case, we are investigating the same matter, though possibly from different directions. I too am concerned with the fair folk, Mr. Strongrock, with the recent thefts of occult material, and with Belphegor."
"Belphegor?" Irene gasped. "The mysterious cat burglar?"
"Indeed."
Vale's brows drew together.
"I have suspicions as to her identity. And what is more, I believe that all these things are connected. Even though you are both visitors to our city..."
He let the sentence trail away, as though expecting to be challenged on his deductions, then continued.
"Even though you haven't been here long, the newspapers have been blatant about the thefts. You can hardly open a paper without seeing a new headline. Let me be frank. Is this what you are investigating?"
Irene caught Kai's eye and gave him a very slight nod. She suspected that Vale would pick up on this, but she hoped that he'd interpret it as a suggestion rather than the order it was.
"You are correct," Kai said. "Then I suggest we combine forces. My card."
He flipped out a silver card case, selected a card from it, and slid it across the table to Kai.
"Please call on me tomorrow morning when we can talk more privately. Your associate is also welcome, of course."
He gave Irene a dry nod, which made her wonder just how much he had guessed.
"Thank you for your time and assistance."
Vale rose. Kai and Irene rose too. There was a quick confusion of bows and curtsies, followed by Vale striding off, the waiter hurrying after him with hat and cloak. Kai and Irene sat back down.
"I'm sorry," Kai said. "I didn't see him following me earlier at all."
"Don't worry," Irene said. "I suspect he's rarely spotted, but I think he could be a very useful contact."
Kai perked up.
"So we got lucky?"
"It happens," Irene said, "from time to time. Now finish your wine and tell me about the centipede."
She was already working out a list of things that she needed to ask Kai later, in private. But for the moment, the centipede would do. Chapter 6.
"Right," Irene said as they finished their coffee. "We have to assume that our cover's blown."
"Because of Vale?" Kai asked.
"No." Irene tilted the cup, staring at the dregs. "The man who tried to snatch my purse. If he's working for the Fae, I can only think he saw me at Lord Wyndham's house, and if that's the case, then he knows my face. He probably knows my hotel, and now he knows you as well. We need to break our trail."
"But all our things are in the hotel room," Kai said. "All the clothes we bought."
"How many did you buy?"
Kai tried to meet her gaze, but his eyes wandered down to his coffee cup.
I was just setting up several possible identities, in case we needed to move among different circles of society, he said, unconvincingly.
Irene patted his hand. Don't worry. In that case, they'll be sure we'll return, and you'll have tied up some of their resources.
Kai sighed.
So, Irene said briskly, standard measures. These were taught in the library alongside languages and research, but were rather harder to practice inside the library's boundaries. But Kai's personal experience should mean he was good at this sort of thing. We'll leave here separately. I'll go first and draw off anyone obvious. They may only have a single watcher. You go to the hotel room, pick up our papers and our cash supply, then leave via the back of the hotel. Do your best to lose any followers. Meet me in front of... She considered, then checked her new clockwork watch. There was no point wearing something electronic when she might have to take it into the library.
Holborn Tube Station at 11 o'clock. That should be busy enough to throw off any watchers.
Damn. I'm never sure whether I prefer worlds that have invented mobile phone equivalents or not.
It'd make communication easier, Kai said.
But it would make it easier to track us too, Irene said, and would empower anyone who's trying to catch up with us. All right. Are you okay with those instructions?
Kai nodded.
What do I do if you don't turn up at Holborn?
Contact Dominic, Irene said. He'll put you in touch with Capalia, and she'll work out what to do next. But I don't expect that to be necessary.
Kai nodded. He picked up his coffee cup and tilted it sadly, looking at the dregs in the bottom.
We're not doing very well so far, are we?
Irene blinked. What? Where'd you get that idea?
Well, the book's been stolen. Enemies are tracking us. We're having to abandon our base.
Get that out of your head right this minute, Irene said. Did you expect us to just be able to waltz in and pick it up?
Kai shrugged.
I had sort of got the idea that it would be appropriate for an assignment involving a novice like me.
Irene leaned forward in her chair.
Point one. The library never has enough people to be able to give novices easy assignments. Never expect an assignment to be easy. Point two, yes, the manuscript has been stolen, but we already have several leads to follow, including an appointment to meet a famous detective.
The thought made her smile. Perhaps sometimes wishes did come true.
Point three, it's not a base, it's a hotel room. Point four, the fact that we are being tracked is a lead in itself, and means we can use them to work backwards to find the book. And point five, we've an invitation to attend a ball at the Liechtenstein Embassy, which ought to be very interesting.
Kai stiffened.
We've got what?
See you at Holborn, Irene said, rising and collecting her bag.
There was indeed someone waiting outside the restaurant. She spotted him while checking her reflection in a shop window. The glare of the actinic street lamps made them better mirrors than the fly-specked piece of glass in the hotel room. Small loss. The tail was an average-looking type, with a cheap bowler hat and a frock coat frayed at lapels and elbows. He also wasn't very good at being inconspicuous. Maybe that was usually the job of the colleague who tried to snatch her bag. At the next street corner, she managed a surreptitious glance back while waiting to cross the road, and saw him murmuring into cupped hands. He opened them, and something buzzed out, circling his head before zooming upwards in a clockwork clatter of wings. Two streets later, he'd rather obviously acquired reinforcements. She stopped to check her hat in another shop window and caught another glimpse of him, clearly gesturing to three newcomers and pointing in her direction. Irene jabbed a hatpin back into place viciously and considered how best to lose them. This London was laid out like most Londons, and she was on the edge of Soho. It'd be easy enough to lose followers there, but a woman on her own would attract the wrong sort of attention, and it might take too long for her to extract herself inconspicuously. A department store might work, but if they had any sense, they'd put watchers at front and back before searching for her inside. Also, now there were at least four of them, and there could be others that she hadn't spotted. The tube itself was a possibility, but she hadn't investigated it yet. And while the crowds might let her hide herself from her pursuers,
they'd also be ideal cover for an accident or kidnapping. She was halfway to Piccadilly by now, too, so she needed to start turning back if she was to meet Kai comfortably by Holborn at 11. Wait. Covent Garden usually had a market of some sort in most alternate Londons, whether it was selling flowers or curios or simply a tourist trap. Even if there weren't many stalls open at this time of night, it should still be busy enough for her to lose her pursuers. That should do the trick. Irene should have expected it. Covent Garden Market was a technology extravaganza. Stalls teetered on collapsible legs and sprayed rays of light from dangling ether lamps. The path between them was a constantly shifting maze as each stall maneuvered for yet more space on its automated feet, bouncing and jarring against the ones next to it. Much like Covent Gardens she'd seen elsewhere, there were several open yards and a central area with a high glass roof and several banks of permanent shops. Pavement cafes added their own influxes of shoppers to the area, and regular jets of steam came shooting out of the sewer gratings and manholes. She put on a burst of speed as she entered the crowd before the men following her could get any closer. She then allowed herself to be drawn into a whirlpool of spectators orbiting a display of mechanical exsanguinators. She decided that the little jabbing steel needles weren't specifically unpleasant in themselves, but the oiliness from the self-slathering antiseptics somehow made the whole thing inexpressibly gruesome. It was something about the way that it glistened under the electric flares. There were as many women here as men, but the real difference was between those she suspected were genuine artisans and engineers, and everyone else. The former had neat equipment cases tucked under their arms or chained to their wrists. The latter included wanderers on the lookout for an interesting bargain, slumming upper classes, or fascinated onlookers. The women all wore scarves or veils against the sooty fog, just as Irene did, concealing anything from just their mouth to their entire face. Many of the men had wound mufflers around the lower part of their faces in a similar way. It gave the whole place a very seedy feeling, akin to a market for Victorian bank robbers, a shady shoppery for shady people. Nearby, bustling market stalls touted portable notebooks with self-adhesive tool sets, and she spotted pocket watches with built-in lasers. She nearly bought one for Kai. Then there were constructor kit automata, followed by freshly fried donuts and self-tattooing kits, just add ink. Then shawls with attached portable heating units, then... It hit her like a whiplash across her back, throwing her to her knees on the dirty pavement. She could feel every inch of her library tattoo burning, feel it mapped out across her back as clearly as if she could see it. The world shivered around her. She tasted bile in her mouth and struggled not to throw up. The words were everywhere. She could see them on the newspaper stands, swimming up through the whiteness to crawl across the paper. She could see them on the back of the paperback novel, which the man in front of her had tucked into his pocket, on the crudely printed advertisements fluttering from every stall, and on the receipts which the woman to her left was checking. They printed themselves on everything legible in a spreading circle around her. Beware Alberich. People were calling out and swearing in surprise and alarm, blaming the engineers and stallholders for some sort of experimental side effect. And what that said about this place, Irene reflected in some distracted corner of her mind, didn't bear thinking about. In some cases, shoppers were shaking the affected items in the hopes that the words would fall off. Some hope. Irene had never before been the victim of an urgent message from the library, but she knew the words would be permanently burned in. It was a shocking thing to do to printed media, which was why it was only saved for the most desperate purposes. Members of the public could read them, but at least no one would know what the words meant. If Alberich was involved in this, then the warning was definitely desperate and necessary. She pulled herself together with an effort that set her teeth on edge and glanced over her shoulder to check on the men who'd been following her. Damn, they were closing fast. They must have decided to pick her up now rather than risk losing her. Irene allowed herself a vicious smile. Pester an agent of the library, would they? hassle her when she'd just received an urgent message, get in her way. Oh, they were going to regret that. She waited for a breathless half minute until the shifting patterns of moving stalls closed up behind her, blocking her pursuers. They'd open again in a moment, of course. She spat out in the language, loud enough for it to carry. Clockwork legs on